Good evening, everyone. It's time to take charge of your life. Hello, this is marriage and family therapist Eleanor Barbaro, your host, inviting you to take charge of your life on WDIY. The theme of this program is that so many events in life happen to us over which we have no control. Our only control is our response to life's situations. It is often said that 90% of life's events happen to us, and 10% is what we make happen. Tonight we talk about an autobiography of a courageous woman and social worker who took an interest in an unpopular cause, the cause of helping incarcerated Jewish men re-enter society, and made it her life's passion. And from that passion was born Beit Teshuvah, a once tiny halfway house that has grown into a renowned treatment organization. Her voyage is a remarkable, and it's an inspiration to all people. This is the personal story of the obstacles she surmounted, as well as the successes she encountered. My guest this evening is Harriet Rosetta, founder of the Los Angeles-renowned nonprofit Drug and Alcohol Treatment Organization. She received a master's in social work from the University of Minnesota and is a much sought-after speaker in synagogues and community groups, as well as trainer for the National Association of Social Workers. She lives in Los Angeles with her husband, Rabbi Mark Borowitz. And it's an honest autobiography of a courageous woman and social worker who took an interest in an unpopular cause of helping incarcerated Jewish men re-enter society and made it her life's passion. It is a pleasure to welcome Harriet Rosetta to help us take charge of our lives on WDIY. Welcome, Harriet.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, Harriet, you wrote a very interesting book called Sacred Housekeeping, a spiritual memoir. How did you get involved in this work to begin with?
Well, that's a long story. I take it back to my mother telling me recently that I was a missionary child. I was always looking for a way to make a difference in the world. And for very many years, I took a lot of wrong turns, and I couldn't find it. And my missionary self was kind of at war with the nice Jewish girl who was supposed to marry the lawyer and live happily ever after. And so I was in a lot of internal conflict. And in the 1980s, I had reached a bottom, really. I was divorced for the second time, and my only daughter had gone off to college, and I was very lost, and I couldn't find where I should go next and what was the purpose of living, really. I had kind of given up. And a friend of mine had been involved with a woman named Janet Levy, who was a metaphysician from Science of the Mind. And she said to me, go see this lady. She makes miracles. Well, I was sort of a cynic and skeptic and not religious or faith-based at all, and I didn't believe in miracles. But I was pretty desperate, and so I went to see this woman. And I figured she's a Jewish lady. I mean, how nuts could she be? So she said to me, what is your problem? Why are you here? I said, my problem is I don't know what I want. What I want is I want to know what I want. And she said, do you pray? And I said, no, I don't pray. I'm an intellectual Jew. We don't pray. She said, I'm going to pray for you. Father of the universe, take this woman by the hand and guide her to her rightful work. She knows she wants to do something in the world, but she doesn't know how or what. So I thought that was a little hokey, but I was unemployed, and I was looking for work. And when the classifieds came, I had left social work. I was looking to make a fortune. Something said to me, well, why don't you see what social work has to offer? And it was the smallest ad on the page, and it said, person of Jewish background and culture to work with Jewish criminal offenders, master of social work degree required. And it was my moment in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. They talk about a spiritual awakening. It was like, oh, my God, you know. This lady prayed for me to find my work, and I have a choice here. I can say this is a coincidence, or I can say maybe there is some cosmic intelligence that I've been called to this work, because I thought nobody was better suited to work with Jewish criminal offenders than me, since I was a nice Jewish girl who liked bad boys. And the fact that there were Jewish criminals was very exciting to me. And so I ran to the place that was advertising for this job. It was a mental health center that had this small little organization within it that visited Jews in jail. We were called Jewish jail ladies. I didn't tell them God sent me because it was a mental hospital. You know, I figured they'd lock me up. But that was how it happened. And that shift from what's the point, nothing matters, no belief in anything, life is hard and then you die, which had defined me for a lot of years, that shift to believing that there is some higher guidance purpose that I had been called has let me sustain this for over 30 years.
And it has really grown. It has really grown, hasn't it?
Oh, that absolutely.
Yes. How did the work begin with the, you began to visit prisoners, Jewish prisoners in a jail?
In county, state, and federal institutions. And I was shocked to find the similarities between the people I was seeing who were locked up and myself. Not that I had done some of the things, but the fractured self between what I know is right and doing wrong, between, for myself, wanting to be thin and eating compulsively or wanting to have a good life and being attracted to bad relationships. That duality was reflected, magnified in the people I was seeing behind bars. I mean, a Jewish grandmother who scammed a bank to buy Ronald Reagan's house because she wanted to leave it to her grandchildren, you know? I saw she was sitting there in state prison. Well, you had a house. Why did you have to do that? Well, to leave a president's house to her grandchildren, you know? So there were understandable connections that I made. First client I saw at the county jail for women was a woman my age who graduated from Hunter College. She had a daughter the age of my daughter. I mean, we were twins, but she was in a red jumpsuit, and I could leave. And I had a real spiritual experience about there, but for the grace of God, go I. Because, you know, I had done some things that could have been considered criminal in the 60s.
What had she done?
She was a Hunter College graduate and a high school teacher, married a man who came back from Vietnam and had gotten hooked on heroin there, as many veterans had. And she tried for a long time to live a double life, to help him get well and be the wage earner. And at some point, she joined him, and she started selling drugs.
Ah, so she became hooked herself.
Yes, and then selling to support their habits.
That's what landed her. So were there many Jewish women prisoners in the facility you were visiting?
Well, the Jewish criminal population is equivalent to the Jewish population at large, you know, maybe 10% of the people in jail or prison, maybe less.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Take Charge of Your Life, and this evening I'm talking with Harriet Rosetta, CEO and founder of the Los Angeles-renowned nonprofit drug and alcohol treatment organization called Bet Teshuvah. And she's written a wonderful book called Sacred Housekeeping, a spiritual memoir, which describes her work in helping prisoners overcome their addiction with an organization called Bet Teshuvah. So how, here you are. You were in this prison visiting women. How did you come to meet the men who were addicted?
We were going to all the jails and prisons, men's and women's.
Oh, men's and
county,
women's.
State, and federal. And I began to see that most of the people I was seeing in jail were addicted to something or someone, or what they talk about in AA, money, property, and prestige, people who had to have always more, you know, deal makers, the compulsive gamblers. Mm. In AA, they talk about people who spend money they don't have to buy things they don't need to impress people they don't like. And I began to call those kind of people that I was seeing, mainly in federal prisons, compulsive mafers. Maferism, I defined it as, you know, big shots, guys who needed more to show off, to be loved, basically. And I began to define addiction as that fracture, that duality within human beings, that my intentions are good, but I can't connect them to my actions. So the inability to unify intention and action is how I define addiction, and I think it's a spiritual malady.
Ah, so you saw them as divided, the ability,
yes,
so that they had the ability to do good, but chose the wrong
way.
Yeah,
and they knew right from wrong.
Yes.
But they couldn't make their actions match their intentions. And I think not only people behind bars or addicts have this kind of duality. It's part of the human condition.
Yes. And so you found this, and you were able to reach them. And how were you able to reach them? How were you able to make a connection with them? You talk about it in your book.
Well, in the beginning, I was going out to the jails. And when you are confined and somebody comes and they're kind to you and they're interested in you and they give you hope, there's a very instant kind of connection because you're dehumanized in jail. So just someone showing up, it was very thrilling work for me to feel the sense that I mattered that much to someone, that I had something to offer that made a difference to somebody. That was a high for me.
Well, we're going to talk more about the program that you established, Beit Teshuvah, when we return to Take Charge of Your Life on WDIY.
The many choices and real voices on WDIY are made possible with support from our generous, sustaining members. An automatic monthly gift of $10 on your credit card is an easy way to become a WDIY member and support the programs you love. Set up your monthly sustaining membership gift today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 7 or visit wdiy.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to Take Charge of Your Life. Hello, this is Eleanor Bobro, your host. We're talking with Harriet Rosetta, who wrote a most interesting book called Sacred Housekeeping, a spiritual memoir about her experiences as a social worker in changing the lives of Jewish men in prison with an organization called Beit Teshuvah. Harriet, how did this organization form? What was the basis of it?
Well, as I had said earlier, I had taken a job with this parent organization that was an outreach to Jewish men and women in jails and prisons that had been started in 1921 by Rabbi Edgar Magnin, who was a big reform rabbi here in Los Angeles. And he and a social worker named Lou Ziskind realized that there were Jewish people in mental hospitals and prisons, and because there were never enough Jews to warrant a Jewish chaplain, the Jewish inmates had to go to either the Catholic chaplain or the Protestant chaplain. So they started a little organization that traveled up and down the state finding Jewish people who were in mental hospitals or incarcerated, and keeping them connected to the Jewish community. A lot of it was like mitzvahic work, you know, if your glasses break or you don't have money on your books or they find out a family member died and someone has to deliver that news to you, that kind of connection. And that was the organization that had advertised in the paper and hired me as a Jewish jail lady.
Ah.
And so I started going around the state visiting the men and women and saying, okay, when you get out, come and we'll try to help you reenter society, because there was no reentry program for people. If you were locked up in the summer and they released you in the winter, you had a tank top and shorts and no money and nowhere to go. And so they would come to my office and they would say, well, you said you'd help me. Here I am. And there was nowhere for them to sleep. There was nothing that the Jewish community had to offer. And I would call around and try to get some funding for a bed for tonight. And they would say, what's your long-term treatment plan? Well, yeah, a bed for tonight. So I got totally frustrated one day, and I said, screw it, and I'll start my own place. And it was around the time that there was a lot of realization about homelessness, and there was federal money coming into the city to establish homeless shelters. And so I wrote a grant to the Federal Emergency Management Act, FEMA, for a one-time acquisition to buy a house for a homeless shelter for Jewish men and women coming out of jails and prisons. And it opened its doors in 1985.
Ah.
And I had no money for staff. I was single. My kid had gone off to college. And so I moved in. And I said, all right, I'll be the staff. And that's how it started. And one guy came, and then three came. And my first week sleeping there, while I was sleeping, they stole my jewelry.
Oh.
And then they helped me look for it, you know. That's what addicts do.
So you also, but you also held sessions for them to help them cope with their difficulties, their addictions, et cetera.
Well, yeah. I mean, the model that I had come up with as I searched for how to help was based on the work of Rabbi Dr. Abraham Twersky, who's both a Hasidic rabbi and a psychoanalyst who had been working in an alcoholism program in Pittsburgh. And he had written a book called Judaism and the 12 Steps, or an article. And Jews had always been kind of suspicious of Alcoholics Anonymous. They thought it was Christian. They talked a lot about God, and so a lot of Jewish people were not comfortable in AA. And Rabbi Twersky wrote this book that basically said that the 12 steps were entirely congruent with Jewish thought, and he showed step by step how each one had a corollary in the Talmud or in the Torah, and that it was entirely consistent. And so I decided to make it an integrated program that integrated the 12 steps of AA with Jewish spirituality and psychotherapy, since I am a therapist, and that those three legs of the stool would be the healing path in community. So we had this little house. And we would make Shabbos together. And I had a sort of simplistic idea that would be enough. You know, I'd make some chicken soup and they'd go on their way. Well, it didn't turn out to be quite that simple. And
you made very good chicken soup.
Yeah. So somewhere along the line, about a year or so after I had opened the doors of Beit Teshuvah, I got a call from the rabbi at the state prison in Chino, California, Rabbi Mel Silverman, a blessed memory. And he said, my congregation here, because there were congregations in all the prisons. My congregation heard that you opened this place, and they would like you to come and talk to us about it. So I did. And the rabbi's inmate clerk at the time was a man named Mark Borowitz, who has since become my husband and a rabbi himself. But at that time, he was an inmate, a very large and aggressive, loudmouthed man who was grilling me about what the hell did I know about the needs of Jewish inmates. So I got a little defensive, and I said, hey, I'm out there doing this thing. You're sitting around in here doing nothing. When you get out of here, come help me. And one day he showed up.
and he did. So you and your husband have been really demonstrating that Beit Teshuvah really means return. Is that right?
Yes.
And so you have developed a house of return, meaning
correct.
That those people, those inmates who choose to come and participate with you have the possibility of returning to a life that they want and the goals that they want to achieve and,
right.
to leave criminality behind. So that is Beit Teshuvah.
Yeah, and over the years, it's not only about, say, 25 to 30% of the 140 people who live at Beit Teshuvah come from the criminal justice system. The rest are just people in recovery who maybe haven't yet been arrested or have heard about us because they have a problem with compulsive gambling or with drugs and alcohol. And now, of course, we're in the middle of an opioid crisis. And so we are seeing those people who got hooked on pain pills because maybe they had a physical injury. But interestingly, the brain doesn't differentiate between psychic and physical pain. So they might have started taking oxycodone for their shoulder, but then they find out that they feel really good. They like themselves better. Life feels better. And so long after the physical pain is gone, they don't want to stop the pills. And when they can't get prescriptions anymore, often they turn to street drugs, to heroin, and they go down.
And what is the, talk about how you see the work impacting the people who've come to participate in the Beit Teshuvah program. What is the impact of the program? Do you see recovery? Do you see a change? Do you see reaching out for help?
Absolutely. People come. They feel hopeless. They're full of shame and despair. They don't think that there's anything left for them. And within 30 days, you can see a magical transformation. And it's based primarily, I think, on feeling connection to the community. This is a healing, faith-based community where you can be accepted with all of your flaws and imperfections and the terrible things you did, and you can feel safe enough to reveal your true self and not to have to hide behind some mask or a false self in order to gain acceptance. Because a lot of the people who get hooked or who end up here don't feel they're good enough, no matter what they've accomplished. They don't feel that they measure up. And so, and they are in conflict. They have that fractured self. There's part of them that wants to be perfect and that can never achieve that. And so they alternate instead of integrate those opposing selves. And then they say, screw it, and they give up. And so we help them to get in touch with the shadow self, the hidden parts of themselves, the part they feel ashamed of, and actually draw on Judaism to legitimize the fact that we have opposing yetzers, a yetzer hara and a yetzer tov, and that's part of being a human being. And the teaching in Judaism that I think is the most relevant to what we do, it certainly was to me, was that there's a midrash that says that the Yetzer Tov is Tov, the good inclination is good, but the evil inclination is very good, which is the paradox of the integration of light and dark, good and evil. That is essential to Jewish thought.
So did you
and how is the Yetzer Hara very good? It's the energy to build, to create. It only becomes evil or dark if it's out of proper measure. So taking that energy and directing it to doing the right thing, no matter what you feel, is the essence of our program.
And what is the success rate of your program, would you say? For example...
It's hard to give a number. Everybody wants a number. This recovery is a lifelong sort of crooked road, and sometimes you go off the path. And so to me, success is if you keep getting back on.
And
you can't measure it just in sobriety or length of time.
So what you're saying is that the ability to pick yourself up and go
exactly.
back again.
Yes, to develop the willingness to get back on the path.
I want to thank you, Harriet Rosetto, author of this very wonderful book called Sacred Housekeeping, a Spiritual Memoir, for helping us to take charge of our lives by understanding that all of us are created in the image of God and are capable of choosing right or wrong. You have shown us that by creating Beit Teshuvah, it is possible for all of us to return to a responsible way of living, that we have a choice to make, amends to make, and to create the lives we want to live based on honesty and self-respect for ourselves as well as for others. Thank you, Harriet Rosetto, author of Sacred Housekeeping, for helping us to take charge of our lives on WDIY.
Yeah.
Harriet, do you have a website that people can contact you?
Beit Teshuvah, that's spelled BEITTSHUVAH.
Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Neil Heaver, producer. See you all on the radio next Monday evening at 6:30 p.m. when I again invite you to take charge of your life on WDIY.